In a few minutes, how student debt can perpetuate economic inequality. I'm David Brancaccio. The new Supreme Court Justice, Amy Coney Barrett, is set to begin work today. She was sworn in last night by President Trump on the White House's South Lawn. Among the many cases that will cross her desk soon are ones involving big money. Here's Marketplace's Kristen Schwab.
First comes the Affordable Care Act, scheduled to be argued a week after the election. The challenge centers on whether the ACA is unconstitutional after a 2017 change that got rid of penalties for people who didn't sign up for health insurance. During confirmation hearings, Barrett told senators she's not hostile to the ACA, though she has criticized rulings in favor of it in the past. At the end of November comes the census and whether undocumented immigrants should be counted, which determines state funding levels and representation in Congress. Last year, the court barred the Trump administration from adding a new question asking people about their citizenship. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who Barrett has replaced, was part of a slim 5-4 majority. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
FinTech is finance meets technology. A unicorn is a startup that gets really big. There's news that Ant Group of China, a colossal FinTech unicorn, is headed for the biggest listing of a new stock in history. Ant Group does many things, including Alipay, a kind of PayPal and a credit rating agency. The word from Hong Kong today is that interest was so great in the forthcoming Ant Group stock among institutional investors that Ant was able to close its order book a day early. The thing pretty much sold out. The initial offering of stock could be worth $34 billion. The realization that the pandemic has entered a new tough phase is one reason cited for bringing down the Dow Jones Industrial Average by 650 points yesterday, 2.3%. Stocks are down in Europe today with the DAX in Germany off by 0.6%. U.S. stock index futures are up this morning with the Dow future up about 0.2%, the S&P future up 0.3%. And speaking of the view from Germany, Volkswagen's CEO says the auto industry does not need more government stimulus to get it through the pandemic. Herbert Diess is seeing sales return more quickly than expected, he told the Financial Times. This is if there isn't a second lockdown and a further economic slump.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Now to our ongoing series, Reimagining the Economy, where we look at ways to come back from this deep recession so that the economy better serves more people than it did before the pandemic. This morning, data that show how the wealth of black families continues to lag across generations and that the burden of student loan debt is a key part of this. Feniba Addo is a professor of consumer science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison who's looked at this. Professor, good morning.
Thank you for having me.
What have you found in terms of student debt when you look at it in the context of the race of the people holding the debt?
Well, our research has found that black borrowers tend to borrow the most. They tend to have higher loan balances and they have highest rates of default and delinquency while in repayment.
In this general discussion of widening inequality in America, there's some very concerning features here. I see that for white families, the wealthier a family is, the less student debt they take on, but that's not necessarily the pattern for black families?
Yeah, so that's actually one of the striking findings of one of my earliest articles. White young adults who went to college and took on debt, as their parental wealth increases, they took on less debt, right? We did not find any evidence to support this same relationship among black borrowers. Black borrowers who came from higher net wealth households, we did not see them taking on less debt to attend college.
Has there been a hypothesis for why that's happening?
in our data at the higher ends of the wealth distribution, which was having approximately like close to $200,000. So it was actually about $191,000. Only about 3% of Black families actually had enough wealth to qualify to be a part of that. We also saw differences in the overall wealth portfolios. So having less access to fungible types of wealth, so savings, you know, home equity that they could draw upon in order to transfer additional funds to their children.
And so what are some of the ways you'd like policymakers to make use of findings like this in trying to really ease these gaps?
So thinking more about, you know, need-based aid, moving away from loan-based aid, but more to grants to help them pay for college so that they're not accumulating excessive amounts of debt. Are there potential frictions in the labor market? We want to think about labor market discrimination in particular. There's very strong evidence to suggest that Black college graduates have higher rates of unemployment compared to white students without a college degree, right? So that is all tied to the ability to earn a living and have an income that allows you to pay back those debts in a reasonable time. But then also, how do we think about what are the current policies in place, such as income-based repayment programs that can be approved upon so that those who need those particular types of policies are accessing them and using them in a way to help them pay back their debts in a reasonable time period.
The University of Wisconsin's Feniba Addo, along with co-author Jason Hull at Dartmouth, did the study Racial Disparities in Student Debt and the Reproduction of the Fragile Black Middle Class. Professor, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And Las Vegas casino mogul Sheldon Adelson, also famous for his generous funding of President Trump's campaigns, is reportedly thinking of getting out of the casino business in the U.S. Bloomberg News, citing unnamed sources, says Adelson is exploring the idea of selling off the Venetian, the Palazzo, and the Sands Convention Center, all in Vegas, for maybe something like $6 billion. He would then concentrate on his gambling operations in Asia. The disappearance of conventions during pandemic has not been kind to Las Vegas. Our producers are Meredith Gerritsen, Stephen Ryan, Daniel Shin, and Erica Soderstrom. I am David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.